Thanks to everyone here for making my visit to the fellowship so wonderful and welcoming. I have relatives 2 hours north of here, and I grew up 2 hours south of here, and for my entire life, I have done nothing but drive past Appleton. It has been great to have a closer look at this community and to get to meet all these inspiring people doing the work of Unitarian Universalism in the Fox Valley. It's also a big honor to be standing in this pulpit. Reverend Roger Birchhausen, Reverend Kathleen, Reverend Wayne, they are all personal ministerial heroes of mine, not only because of their successful and important ministries, but because of the way they are human in the world. Our whole movement is so fortunate to have them, and I am very fortunate to be here. So I want to start off my talk today with a very small and personal story that entirely takes place on the internet. For those who have ever spent any time online, it's clear that the corporations that dominate the internet know a lot about you, and that they are very interested in figuring out what exactly it is you might desire. If you look at a pair of shoes on one website, ads for that very same pair of shoes will start appearing on all the other websites you visit. And if you log into Facebook and post a picture of yourself at Disney World, Facebook will start showing you ads of restaurants in Orlando. It's all about figuring out your desires, manipulating them, and getting you to click and spend. So I'm on Facebook one day. Well, okay, I'm on Facebook every day, but on this one recent day, Facebook decides to show me a new ad. The ad contains two photos of a guy, one from the front and one from the side. The guy is basically bald, and in all capital letters it says, "Every man needs his hair." Really? Facebook seemed to know a certain something about me. This ad appeared just a few weeks after a different Facebook ad tried to sell me men's wigs in case I was looking for a fresh new style. Facebook perhaps knew something about the outside of my head, but it does not understand the inside of my head, because I'm quite content without my hair. And if I wanted a fresh new style, a wig would not be my first choice. It was a little creepy to think that the computers at Facebook had the ability to analyze my profile photos so well. There are actually two separate verses in the Bible, in the Gospels of Mark and Luke, about God knowing each person so well that he has numbered the hairs on our heads. God has been replaced by the software at Facebook. I was also dismayed by the way these ads went about trying to persuade me to spend money, the way these companies attempted to prey on and manipulate my desires. The implication was that I am not fine the way I am, and that I am apparently stale rather than fresh. The message was that I should desire to be something different, and that I should act on that desire. Not only should I desire to be something different from what I am, but that I should do so in order to be desirable to others. Women and girls have been subjected to these kinds of messages since the beginning of time, and now we live in a time of unfortunate equality, with men and boys increasingly targeted around shame and desire. Messages about desire are everywhere because desire is powerful. It's a powerful force. Whether it's desire for the material goods of this earth, a desire for God, or a desire to be desired by our fellow human beings. And we humans have been trying to figure out desire for a very long time. If we go back 1600 years, St. Augustine of Hippo was writing about desire as a dangerous thing. He called desire a morass, a hissing cauldron, and hell's black river. Going back another 800 years from that, the second noble truth of Buddhism is that the main source of human suffering is cravings and desire. These dire ancient viewpoints stand in stark contrast to our modern ideas about desire. We are so often encouraged to follow our heart's desire, whether finding a career or choosing a romantic partner or just buying something new for the house. And unlike the vast majority of people who lived in great scarcity throughout human history, We live in a society in which many of our desires can be fulfilled by a trip to the store or a tap on a screen. If Buddha had longed for cheesecake, his desire may have gone unfulfilled and indeed caused him to suffer. But what if the Buddha had just been able to swing by Costco on the way home? He might have a very different view of desire. Desire can be trouble, but it can also be pretty tasty. Also, unlike the Buddha and most people throughout history, we have a great information and awareness available to us. If you lived in a village anywhere on Earth 1,000 years ago, chances are you couldn't read and that you never traveled more than a few miles during your short life. Your desires were limited by your experience and whatever biological yearnings you were born with. Those of us who are alive today have basically the same brains as those folks from 1,000 years ago, but we have all the knowledge of the entire world at our disposal, not just in our libraries and on our computers, but even on the phones in our pockets. Words, images, videos, and sounds from all cultures. It's a lot to process, more than most human beings have ever had to process, and it has profound effects on our desires. On the negative side, the information revolution helps us see all that we ourselves do not have. We can get endless up-close looks at the lifestyles of the rich and famous. We see the quote-unquote world's most beautiful people. We see places and material goods and foods that seem so much better than what we have in our daily lives. The Buddha sure has a point. All that desire, all that unfulfilled desire, all that focus on earthly pleasures and things that we lack or that we want more of can most definitely be a recipe for disappointment, conflict, and suffering. There's actually quite a bit of science now to back up the Buddha. Psychological studies have determined just how fleeting the joy is from newly acquired material goods, and how people who score higher on materialism scales have more anxiety, more depression, and lower quality relationships. Desire may not be quite a hissing cauldron or hell's river, but desires, even temporarily fulfilled desires, can indeed lead to unhappiness. But just as there are many sides to desire, there's a flip side to our being able to access enormous amounts of information about the world we live in. If we move past HGTV and the Food Channel and America's Next Top Model, all of which were created solely to manipulate our desires, if we move beyond what's most popular and take in the full picture of the world we live in, or at least as much as our humble brains can process, we might be moved toward a very different kind of desire. Because the truth is that far more people in our world live in slums and shanty towns and refugee camps than live in HGTV houses. Far more people in our world are eating a bit of rice provided by a relief agency than they are eating a meal that takes all day to prepare. It is a natural human desire to look away from deprivation and disaster. Such knowledge can be especially overwhelming now that we have the ability to see so much sadness from so many perspectives. But when human beings are able to keep their eyes on all that is real, both the good and the bad, they can find themselves moving into far more complex, far more generous realms of desire. This taking in of all that is and seeing what it is that stirs our hearts reminds me of a quote you may be familiar with. It's a quote by E.B. White. White is best known as the author of Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little, but he mostly wrote for adults. And he once gave this quote to the New York Times. If the world were merely seductive, that would be easy. If it were merely challenging, that would be no problem. But I arise in the morning torn between a desire to improve or save the world and a desire to enjoy or savor the world. This makes it hard to plan the day. I really appreciate White's choice of the word savor to describe desire. Savoring is very different from consuming, which is the word we are more used to hearing. Americans are described as consumers far more often than we are described as citizens. And consumption and consummation of our desires have become our primary identity. But savoring implies a different pace, a different valuing of the experience. Consumption is often about volume. Nobody savors at Old Country Buffet. Savoring is about depth. I also love White's broader point, which is something that a lot of thinking aware people can relate to. Save or savor? How shall I spend my short time here? There is, of course, some privilege inherent in what White is saying. A lot of people in this country and in this world are not able to make a choice between saving the world or savoring it. They're too busy saving themselves or trying to save their families. Or they may live in an oppressive or impoverished place. But there are significant numbers of people, particularly in our country, who have the resources to decide whether to enjoy the world as it is or to improve the world into something they would like it to be. You don't have to look very far to find people who desire to improve the world and are making the choice to do so. You yourself may be one of those people. The person in the row in front of you may be another. This fellowship has many teams dedicated to social justice and environmental justice and racial justice, and this congregation has shown leadership in the community around these issues. This kind of desire, a desire for justice and equity, is actually one of the kinds of desire that can also get you in trouble. I know a fair number of ministers and lay people who have been arrested while pursuing a desire for justice. But trouble like that is the good kind of trouble. Sometimes it takes tension to pull the world forward. How can desire fail? Denise Levertov asks in the poem we heard earlier. We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy, only begun to envision how it might be to live as siblings with beast and flower. Not as oppressors, so much is in bud. So desire can have some seriously good outcomes. Desire can lead to happy couplings and career fulfillment, self-improvement and social progress, and the creation of things that are most magnificent. Desire can also have some seriously bad outcomes. Unhappy couplings, a focus on appearances rather than essences, a never-ending pursuit of material things, and a plundering of our planet to fulfill the desire to acquire. Desire makes it hard to plan the day. Some religious movements have answered the conundrum of desire with lots of restrictions, rules about who is allowed to desire whom, rules that tend to align closely with the desires of the people making the rules. Some groups encourage the renunciation of desire altogether. While I do not doubt that there are residents of bare-bones monastic communities who live worthwhile lives while desiring nothing, that's probably not going to work for most people. Just like highly restrictive diets don't work for most people. At the other end of the spectrum is the if it feels good, do it way of being. Being all desire all the time. Turning one's life over to one's every desire isn't going to be practical for most people either. All you can eat has its downsides too. One solution, one answer, I think, is something I expect would appeal to most Unitarian Universalists. That solution is questions. One of my seminary professors, Dr. Mike Hoag, talked about the danger of unquestioned desires, a phrase that really stayed with me these years. Unquestioned desires are behind a lot of our economic, environmental, and interpersonal problems. It's natural to desire things and to acquire them because we humans evolved during millennia of scarcity. We're wired to acquire as much as we can during seemingly abundant times. When that kind of desire goes unquestioned, when motivations and consequences go unexamined, we run into the major sustainability problems that are currently rocking our world. Unquestioned desires are problematic on an interpersonal level as well. If we have a strong romantic desire for someone but don't take a reasoned look at what the relationship will really be like, well, I think many of us have either lived that story or had a close look of how that can go. A desire to drink or to gamble can be harmless or, if unquestioned, disastrous. all desires eventually intersect with reality. Asking questions and bringing a critical eye can bring reality into the picture sooner. In a book called Being Consumed, Economics and Christian Desire, William T. Kavanaugh asks some of these critical questions. Kavanaugh is a professor at a Catholic university in Minnesota, and many of his ideas transcend religion. For one thing, he talks about the importance of telos. Telos is a Greek word, and it means ultimate purpose or goal. Telos is something to keep in mind when considering what to do with desire. We choose to believe, Kavanaugh says, that through the miracle of free competition, our consumption will feed others. But the truth is that self-interested consumption does not bring justice to the hungry. Kavanaugh emphasizes reality, and he encourages us to think of our ultimate purpose. And while consumption is often equated with an over-attachment to things, Kavanaugh argues that consumerism actually has a strong element of detachment. Detachment from production and from the people who are producing the things we desire. Very true. Readily available facts about sweatshops and Chinese factories and farm labor are disregarded because of the strong desire for the goods that are produced. Some consumers may view this kind of detachment as freedom, freedom from responsibility for other people. But Kavanaugh says that true freedom is something different. The key to true freedom, he says, is not just following whatever desires we happen to have, but cultivating the right desires. In other words, if one of your desires is the result of the messages around you, rather than something more deeply felt and discerned, rather than something tested by the fire of reason, rather than something that is consistent with your telos, if your desire is a reaction rather than a stirring from within your soul, how truly independent and free are you? We do not always get to choose our environments or the situations that life puts us in, but if we are deciding which desires to cultivate, if we are figuring out which desires we desire to have, the choices we do have over how we use our time matters greatly. Spending hours looking at magazines of celebrities and airbrushed models may lead to unrealistic desires in a partner, or unrealistic desires for what one's own body should look like. Relentless exposure to advertising can foster an insatiable desire for more. Relentless exposure to materialistic friends can do the same thing. On the other hand, reading a book on spirituality, or engaging in reflection with thoughtful people, or spending time serving communities where there are great needs, things can be the seeds from which higher order desires can bloom. And so, as our time together comes to a close, may we go forth and cultivate our highest desires, a desire for human connection, for an experience of God or the holy, for enlightenment and love, a desire for justice, equity, and social progress. Desires that are in line with our telos may in fact leave us both fulfilled and hungry to do more work for more good things for ourselves and for our world. It's a world worth saving and a world worth savoring. We have only begun to imagine how it might be. So much is in bud.